Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're getting into homeowners insurance.
Yeah, it's a big topic.
Absolutely. You sent over this really insightful analysis on P&C product trends. And, well, our mission today is to unpack the key stuff.
Right. Specifically, HO3 and HO5 policies.
Exactly. Those, and also these modern endorsements, you know, mm-hmm. for all the tech and how homes are changing.
Mm-hmm. It's crucial stuff.
The idea is, by the end, you listening should really get a better handle on your coverage, maybe spot some gaps.
Okay. Sounds good. Let's dive in.
Right. Where should we start? Maybe the HO3. It seems like the baseline.
Yeah, let's do that. The HO3 policy, it's really common, kind of the standard for a lot of folks.
Why is that, generally?
Well, it hits a sort of balance, you know, good coverage, but usually more affordable.
Right.
The key thing for the house itself, the dwelling, other structures, is open perils coverage.
Open perils. Explain that a bit more.
Sure. Think of it like this. Pretty much any direct physical loss is covered, unless the policy specifically says it's not excluded.
So it covers most things unless they list it as an exception, like, say, a flood.
Exactly. Flood, earthquake, wear and tear. Those are typical exclusions. But if a tree falls on your roof or you have a fire, that's generally covered because it's not excluded.
Okay, that sounds pretty comprehensive for the building itself. But that doesn't cover everything inside the house the same way, does it?
That's the critical distinction. No, it doesn't. Your personal property, your furniture, electronics, clothes, all that stuff, it works differently under an HO3.
How so?
For your belongings, the HO3 uses named perils coverage.
Named perils. So the opposite of open perils.
Pretty much. The policy has a specific list of dangers or perils that are covered. Things like fire, lightning, windstorm, hail, theft. Maybe vandalism.
And if the damage is caused by something not on that list.
Then, unfortunately, it's probably not covered.
Okay, so give me an example. Like, I accidentally knock over my brand new TV.
Nope. Accidental breakage. Not typically a named peril, so likely no coverage there with a standard HO3.
What about, my wedding ring just disappears. I don't know if it's stolen, it's just gone.
Mysterious disappearance. Also, generally not on the named perils list.
Hmm. Or a power surge. Say lightning doesn't hit the house directly, but a surge fries my computer.
Yeah, that's another tricky one. Power surges often aren't included as a named peril unless they result directly from, say, a lightning strike covered elsewhere.
What about animal damage? Like raccoons getting in the attic?
Good question. Usually damage by birds, vermin, rodents, insects is excluded anyway. But damage from other wild animals, like raccoons tearing things up? Since raccoon invasion isn't a named peril, that damage to your personal property in the attic wouldn't typically be covered by the HO3. The damage to the structure might be under open perils, but not the stuff they wreck.
Wow. Okay. So there are definitely some potential gaps there.
For sure.
And I remember reading something about limits, even if it is a covered peril, like theft.
Sublimits.
Exactly. That's a really important point. HO3s almost always have sublimits for certain types of valuables.
Like jewelry. Jewelry is the classic example. There might be a total limit of, say, $1,500 just for theft of jewelry.
So if someone steals my $5,000 necklace.
You'd only get up to that $1,500 sublimit from the base policy.
Yeah.
Ouch. What else has sublimits typically?
Furs, silverware, firearms, sometimes business property kept at home. It's the insurer's way to manage risk on items that are easily stolen or have concentrated value.
Right. So you really need to check those specific limits if you own valuable things.
Absolutely. And don't forget those big overarching exclusions that apply to everything, the dwelling and your stuff.
The ones you mentioned earlier.
Yeah. Earth movement. So earthquakes, landslides, mm-hmm. flood, just normal wear and tear, intentional loss, like if you damage your own property on purpose. Nuclear hazard, governmental actions. Those are pretty much always excluded.
Okay. So HO3, solid foundation. Open perils for the structure, but named perils and sublimits for your stuff can leave gaps.
That's a good summary.
Now, the analysis called the HO5 a comprehensive upgrade. What's the big step up? The absolute key difference is the HO5 extends that broader open perils coverage to your personal property, too.
Ah, okay. So your belongings get the same kind of coverage as the house itself.
Exactly. Instead of needing damage to be caused by a specific named peril, from a list.
It's covered unless it's specifically excluded.
You got it. That's a huge shift. It provides much broader protection for your stuff.
So back to my examples. If I accidentally knock over my TV with an HO5.
Likely covered, yeah. Assuming there isn't some weird specific exclusion for that, accidental direct physical loss is generally covered.
Spilling paint on the sofa.
Probably covered.
Losing something valuable. Maybe not mysteriously, but just losing it.
That gets trickier. Lost items might still be excluded depending on policy wording, but damage from many more accidental causes is covered compared to HO3. It just aligns the coverage basis for both the building and contents.
That sounds way better for peace of mind regarding possessions. What about those sublimits, like for jewelry? Are they different in an HO5?
Often, yes. HO5 policies usually come with higher standard sublimits built in. That $1,500 jewelry theft limit on an HO3 might be $2,500 or even $5,000 on an HO5 automatically.
So less chance of being underinsured for moderately valuable things.
Correct.
And I think I read something about replacement cost. Is that standard with an HO5?
That's another really big plus. Many HO5 policies automatically include replacement cost coverage for your personal property.
Explain replacement cost versus, what's the other one? Actual cash value.
Right. Actual cash value, or ACV, pays you what the item was worth right before it was damaged, factoring in depreciation, how much value it lost due to age and wear. Replacement cost value, or RCV, pays the cost to buy a brand new item of similar kind and quality today.
Okay, so if my 5-year-old laptop gets fried, ACV gives me maybe a couple $100, but RCV gives me enough to buy a similar new laptop.
Pretty much, yes. And with an HO3, you usually have to pay extra for an endorsement to get RCV on your contents. With many HO5s, it's included.
That's a significant difference, especially for electronics, furniture, things that depreciate.
It really is. And there's often broader theft coverage, too. HO5s typically offer worldwide theft protection for your belongings, which is great if you travel.
Good point. So if my camera gets stolen on vacation.
Better chance of coverage with an HO5 than a standard HO3, which might limit theft coverage away from home.
Okay, HO5 sounds clearly superior in terms of coverage breadth. But those major exclusions, flood, earthquake, they still apply, right?
Oh, absolutely. Those fundamental exclusions are consistent. You still need separate policies or endorsements for flood and earthquake, regardless of HO3 or HO5.
And the cost, I assume the HO5 is more expensive.
It is. You're typically looking at maybe 15 to 25% higher premium than a comparable HO3. So it's a trade-off. Better coverage, higher cost.
Makes sense. Okay, so even with an HO5 and its higher limits, what if you have really high-value items, like fine art, expensive jewelry collections, antiques? The analysis mentioned scheduling items.
Yes, scheduled personal property endorsements. These are crucial. If the value of an item exceeds even the HO5 sublimit, or if you want broader open perils coverage specifically for that item without a deductible applying.
You schedule it.
It means listing the item individually on your policy with its specific insured value.
And you can't just say, I have a painting worth $10,000. You need proof.
Oh, definitely. You need documentation, usually a recent professional appraisal, maybe a detailed receipt, photos, sometimes videos, serial numbers if applicable.
Makes sense. For things like art or collectibles, I guess you need a specialist appraiser.
Ideally, yes. Someone who really knows that specific market jewelry, art, antiques, musical instruments, whatever it is.
And what should that appraisal include? Just the dollar value?
A good appraisal does more. It should document provenance, the history of ownership, if known the item's condition, ideally mention comparable sales, and clearly state the replacement value.
Got it. Detailed proof of value for specific high-worth items. Okay, let's switch gears slightly. What about older homes? Sometimes replacing them exactly as they were is, well, really expensive or maybe even impossible. The analysis mentioned HO8.
Right, the HO8 form. It's specifically designed for older homes, often historic ones, where the replacement cost using original materials and methods would be way higher than the home's actual market value.
So how does it work differently?
It uses a kind of modified valuation. Instead of paying to rebuild exactly like the original, it covers the cost to repair or replace using common modern materials and construction methods.
Ah, so functional replacement, not necessarily historical replication.
Precisely. It acknowledges the challenges finding artisans, sourcing original materials, complying with modern codes, which might change things anyway. It makes insurance more practical for these homes.
And the coverage itself, is it open perils like HO3?
Typically, no. HO8 usually provides named perils coverage for both the dwelling and the contents, similar to the contents coverage in an HO3, and often pays out on an actual cash value basis, considering depreciation.
So, more limited coverage overall, but matches the specific valuation needs of certain older homes.
Yes. Now, for higher value historic homes where the owner wants better protection than HOH, there's another option. Market value policies.
Market value. How's that different?
Instead of focusing just on rebuild cost, it establishes an agreed value based on the home's actual market value, considering location, architecture, history, things beyond just the bricks and mortar.
Interesting. Recognizes the unique character and value.
Right.
Okay, let's pivot now to, well, the guts of modern homes, all the systems. Advanced HVAC, smart tech, complex plumbing, maybe solar panels.
Yeah, homes are getting way more complex technologically.
And replacing that stuff if it breaks down must be expensive. Does a standard policy, HO3 or HO5, cover my fancy furnace if it just quits? Not due to fire, just mechanical failure.
Generally, no. Standard policies cover damage from covered perils, like a fire damaging the furnace, but internal mechanical or electrical breakdown, that's usually excluded.
Okay, another potential gap.
A big one. And think about what's underground, too. The service lines, water, sewer, gas, electrical running to your house.
Right, under the lawn.
Exactly. Repairing or replacing those can be incredibly costly, involving digging up your yard. And standard policies often only cover the lines right up to your foundation, if at all.
So if the sewer line collapses under my driveway, I'm on the hook.
Typically, yes, with a standard policy. That's where service line protection endorsements come in.
Okay, tell me about those. What do they cover?
They extend coverage to those underground utility lines on your property. Water, sewer, gas, electrical, communication lines, even geothermal or lines to septic systems or wells.
And what causes these things to fail? It's not like they get hit by lightning often.
Tree roots are a huge one. They invade and crack pipes. Simple deterioration over time, freeze-thaw cycles damaging pipes, electrical surges underground, even just the weight of vehicles driving over them or someone accidentally digging into them.
Yikes. I can see how a sewer line repair could get expensive fast. Digging, replacing pipe, fixing the driveway or lawn.
Easily. A collapsed sewer line could run $5,000, $10,000, even more in some cases.
So the endorsement covers that cost.
Up to the endorsement's limit, yes. And the surprising thing is, these endorsements are usually quite affordable, often like $30 to $60 a year.
Seriously, for potentially thousands in coverage.
Yeah, typical limits might be $10,000, $15,000, maybe $25,000. For the cost, it's often a very good value proposition.
Seems like a no-brainer for many homeowners.
Yeah.
What about the systems inside the house failing? You mentioned breakdown is usually excluded. Is there an endorsement for that?
Yes, equipment breakdown coverage. This is specifically for those internal mechanical or electrical failures.
What kind of equipment does it usually cover?
Think HVAC systems, electrical panels, major appliances, fridge, oven, washer, dryer. Even smart home components, sometimes renewable energy equipment like solar inverters.
So if my central air conditioner's compressor just suddenly seizes up internally?
That's exactly the kind of thing equipment breakdown is designed to cover, subject to the policy terms and deductible.
Does it cover things that a warranty might not? Like if I installed something wrong or a power surge caused the failure?
It often can, yes. Warranties frequently exclude things like operator error, power surges, sometimes even wear and tear. Equipment breakdown can fill those gaps, and it continues coverage after warranties expire. It's especially useful for homes with complex, interconnected systems where one failure can affect others.
Okay. Now, the analysis also mentioned home systems protection. Is that just another name for equipment breakdown?
It's similar, but sometimes broader. Home systems protection is often specifically packaged for residential risks and might cover a wider range of permanently installed equipment. Think the entire HVAC system, including ductwork, generators, communication wiring, security systems. It can be a bit more comprehensive for the integrated systems of a modern home.
Got it. A potentially wider net for built-in home tech.
Right. Now, another really unpleasant scenario. Water damage from backups.
Ugh, yeah. Sewage backing up into the basement. Nightmare fuel. And standard policies don't cover that, you said.
Correct. Damage from sewer or drain backups or sump pump overflows is a standard exclusion.
So what's the fix?
You need a specific endorsement commonly called backup of sewer and drain or something similar.
And that covers, well, the mess.
Yes. It typically covers the water damage itself, the cost of cleanup and sanitization, which is crucial with sewage damage to your personal property in the basement, and maybe even loss of use if you have to move out temporarily.
Definitely seems essential, especially if you have a finished basement. How much coverage do people typically need for that?
It varies. You need to think about the basement square footage, what you store down there, potential cleanup costs. $5,000 might be okay for some, but $10,000, $25,000, or even more might be needed for a large finished basement with valuable contents.
And what does adding that cost?
It's more than service line, maybe $75 to $150 extra per year, sometimes more for higher limits. But again, compared to the potential cost of a major backup, it's worth considering.
What about preventing backups? Does having a good sump pump help? Maybe a backup pump?
Absolutely. Mitigation is key. Battery backup sump pumps, water sensors, backflow valves, these can significantly reduce the risk.
Do insurers give discounts for that stuff?
Many do, yes. Especially for systems that provide alerts. It shows you're proactive about preventing a costly claim. It's good risk management.
Right. Prevents a disaster and might save you money on insurance. Win-win.
Exactly. Think about common causes: city sewer overload and heavy rain, tree roots blocking the line again, sump pump failing in a power outage, simple clogs. This endorsement is the safety net.
Okay, we've hit the core policies and some really key endorsements for the physical house and its systems. Let's talk technology integration now. Homes are just full of connected devices.
They really are. It's changing everything, including insurance risk, new exposures, but also new ways to prevent losses using tech.
How are insurers responding?
Well, one big way is through discounts for smart home devices that reduce risk.
Like what? A smart thermostat?
Less likely a thermostat, more like smart security systems, monitored alarms, video doorbells. Those can sometimes get you a discount. But the really big one insurers are interested in now is water leak detection.
Ah, because water claims are so frequent and expensive.
Exactly. Smart valves that shut off water automatically if a leak is detected, flow sensors, moisture sensors near appliances. That tech can dramatically cut down on water damage.
So installing one of those systems could actually lower my premium.
Potentially, yes. You need to check the specific insurer's program, what devices qualify, how much the discount is, documentation needed. But beyond the discount, the real value is preventing the leak in the first place.
Makes sense. But all this connectivity, it creates cyber risks, right?
Yeah.
Is my homeowner's policy going to help if my smart home gets hacked?
Almost certainly not. Standard HO policies offer basically zero cyber coverage. It's a huge emerging gap.
So there's an endorsement for that, too.
Yes. Home cyber protection endorsements are becoming more common.
What do they cover? Someone's stealing my data through my smart fridge.
Could be part of it. They often cover costs to restore your systems after an attack, help with data breach response, cover losses from fraudulent fund transfers initiated via hacking, even cyber extortion like ransomware.
Ransomware on my home computer.
It happens. Some policies also cover data recovery costs if malware wipes your drive, for instance, often for all household members' devices.
Wow. Okay, so if considering that, need to look at the limits, what's covered, what's excluded, quality of response help.
Exactly. And the deductible.
What about physical damage to the smart tech itself? Like that power surge example again. Is standard coverage usually enough?
Often not. Standard policies have low sublimits for power surge damage, might require visible burn marks, might not cover repeated small surges.
So again, an enhanced endorsement.
Right.
Enhanced power surge protection endorsements offer higher limits, broader triggers, sometimes cover smart home infrastructure explicitly, and might have less strict proof requirements. For the tech itself, getting replacement costs might mean scheduling valuable systems, getting specific tech endorsements, or just increasing overall contents coverage.
Okay. One more tech-related one. Identity theft. Is that ever included?
Not usually standard, but very commonly offered as an add-on endorsement now.
And what does that typically give you? Just monitoring?
Often more than just monitoring. Good ones provide case management, someone to actually help you fix the mess, help replacing documents, cover lost wages if you have to take time off work, reimburse some fraudulent charges.
And the monitoring part?
Usually includes credit report monitoring, alerts for suspicious activity, sometimes dark web monitoring to see if your info is being traded illegally.
So help after the fact and proactive monitoring too. Need to check the specifics of the service offered, coverage limits, deductible.
You got it. Quality of the restoration service is key there too. Okay. We've covered a ton on policies and modern endorsements. Let's just briefly touch on a few specific big perils for certain areas. Hurricanes.
Key thing there is a deductible. Often a separate percentage-based deductible like 1%, 2%, 5% of your dwelling coverage. Understand what triggers at Windsdeed, name storm, and how long that deductible applies. Asked about secondary wind events too.
And wildfires. Huge issue out west and elsewhere now.
Defensible space is critical, clearing vegetation around the home. Building hardening helps immensely fire-resistant roof siding, ember-proof vents, double-paned windows. Insurers often reward these efforts. Also, check your additional living expense. ALE limits rebuilding after a wildfire can take longer than the standard 12 months. Look for extended ALE options.
Really quick. Not just California.
Definitely not. Risk exists in many places. It's always excluded from standard HO policies, so you need a separate policy or endorsement. In California, the CEA is a big provider. Check for building code upgrade coverage, especially for older homes. Be aware of exclusions like masonry veneer damage.
And finally, hail can cause a surprising amount of damage.
Yep. Similar to hurricanes, watch for percentage-based wind hail deductibles. You can often buy an endorsement to get back to a standard flat dollar deductible, but it costs more. Weigh the cost against your local hail frequency.
Okay. Wow. That was a real deep dive into the weeds of homeowners insurance. We went from the basics of HO3 versus HO5.
Highlighting that huge difference in personal property coverage named perils versus open perils.
Right. All the way through scheduling valuables, handling older homes, and then all these crucial endorsements for modern systems. Service lines, equipment breakdown, water backup.
And the tech side, smart home discounts, cyber protection, ID theft, enhanced surge coverage.
It really underscores how important it is to look beyond just the basic policy structure and understand those limitations and available add-ons.
Absolutely. You need to match the coverage to your specific home, belongings, and risks.
Which brings us to a final thought, I guess. Given how fast homes are changing, how complex systems are getting, and how threats like cybercrime and climate impacts are evolving, how often should you, the homeowner, be actively reviewing your policy? Is once a year even enough anymore to make sure you're truly covered and not exposed to some huge, unexpected cost down the line?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's definitely not a set-it-and-forget-it product anymore. It needs ongoing attention.